Who's the best show?
Not the situation.
Ed Show! Ed Show! Ed Show! Yeah!
The Linux Link Tech Show is on.
Is on.
Your link to GNU Linux and the latest technology. 2 hours of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Free software, free speech, open technology,
and open mic.
I love it.
Now, live from the Linux Link Tech Show studios, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up and take it away.
Flash alert. Captain America has died.
No!
Now, why'd you go and throw a spoiler like that? Maybe some of our fans didn't get to read the issue yet.
It's a sad day.
It is. It's a very sad day.
Yeah, but you know that
I didn't
you
even
cannot
know you said.
Kill... No, you cannot kill Captain America.
And Starbuck is not dead.
I would honestly be surprised if he is truly dead, if he stays truly dead. But if he doesn't, if he does stay dead, that's pretty impressive.
There's no way. You cannot kill Captain America. It's impossible. You know it's just a ploy, right?
Because he's Captain America.
I wouldn't doubt it's just a ploy, but you know, Captain America was one of the first superhero comic books that I ever started reading.
I saw that this morning and I said, no way.
I've been reading Captain America for, God, since I was like 11 years old. I wish one day I learned how to read, though.
That helps.
I just look at the pictures.
You just like
great.
The pretty pictures.
Look at the pictures.
Look at the pictures.
What's this scrawling in these little balloons around the pictures? I don't understand those. These lines. With slants and all sorts of squiggly marks. It must be Japanese.
You just kind of make up your own story that go along
That's
with the
right.
pictures, right?
That's right. Ooh, look at—he's throwing his shield at the pretty man. No, but that's a sad day. Sad day. I blame Dave Yates, of course.
Just blame Dave.
Absolutely.
It's his fault. It's probably Captain America was driving in his car behind Dave Yates the other day and was complaining about how he was driving so slow.
80 miles an hour, right?
Yeah, and Dave had him bumped off. And speaking of Dave Yates, congratulations to Chess Griffin for his 50th episode. You like how that segue went, right?
Dan, you're definitely very diplomatic, I'd say.
I like it. Good job. Good job, Chess. Top of the line.
Stuff.
And Dave Yates, too, on episode 32. I'm glad he put one out before you. Wait a minute. Isn't Dave supposed to be in...
Dominican Republic.
Yeah.
He is.
So why is he on the chat?
Good question, man.
How about that?
He likes us.
Can't stay away for 1 week. But what the heck?
We're like crack. You just keep coming back.
And you ask yourself, why? Why? I listened to last week's show and I said, why?
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 So what technology things do we have to talk about this week?
Oh, I got a handful of things, but I'm going to let you guys talk first. I should just probably... Yeah, go ahead. You guys can talk first.
I read just for fun, the Linus Torvalds story. Good book, man. Haven't any of you guys read that book?
I started to read it, but then I can't find it now.
Nope. It's a real. You can get it online at Amazon or wherever. It's a real easy read, man. It's only about 260 pages. It's good light reading for like when you're sitting on the throne, and it's pretty cool. You know, he talks about him growing up and how he developed the Linux kernel, and how the whole thing just snowballed, and it's informative. It's a good read.
Yeah, I do want to read it, and. It's my wife read it. It's somewhere around my place.
Buried in the boxes.
Yeah. No, it's, I don't know. I bet you it's right over here on my bookshelf.
Hopefully you didn't give it away when you were cleaning out all the old books and manuals at your place.
No, that's one I wouldn't give away. That wasn't even mine to begin with. I stole it. Can you guess who I stole it from?
Library.
No.
Link.
No. Link doesn't read.
Wasn't me.
He burns books. Come on, you know that.
Read,
yeah. One of those.
Jen. She lent she lent it to me and then moved away to Arizona. And we haven't heard from her like since.
That could be difficult to give it back to her.
Yeah, it's around here. I'm reading 1984 now. I never read the book. I figure it's about damn time I do.
I read that a long, long time ago.
Good book.
In 84.
Yeah, something like that, right?
Ouch. We've always been at war with Eurasia.
That's We've never been at war with Eurasia.
We've always been at war with Eurasia. Ah. All right. So.
Something.
Is that your tech news for the week? Right. Pat, are you done?
Well, I've been busy still painting and moving things and all that fun stuff.
You're still painting down there?
Well, I got the stairs and stuff.
He's painting each individual fiber of the rug.
Oh, and you had to redo your boy's bedroom, right?
Yeah.
Don't you get sick of the painting?
Yeah, it gets a little tedious after a while.
You just want to beat your head against the wall? But you
it's
can't because you
fun.
Just painted it? Well, that's the way it goes.
Well, actually, I did order a high-definition capture card on eBay for $56.
For your MythBox.
Which one did you get?
I got the Avermedia A180. There's like three or four different high-definition cards that you can pick up, and this is one of the ones that are well-supported under Linux. And I'm going to stick it into my server as a, you know, as the one of the backends, like a secondary capture. So the main box, when I build it, is going to pull off the content or the FireWire connection on the cable box. This thing is, what I'm going to do is I'm going to split off the connection going to the cable modem and have one connection going into this thing. So I'll have two recording sources, you know, the cable box and then directly the connection directly coming in from the cable connection.
Cool.
Yeah, should be fun.
Wow, we are back on BinRev now. They have everything fixed. I can actually kick the fallback. Sorry about that. It's been off and touch and go. I just keep forgetting.
Hey, did you guys see that that new podcast, the Linux Link?
I didn't listen to it yet. I've been meaning to add that.
It's an embedded Linux podcast.
And I've been meaning to get it.
And I guess they've never heard of us.
Yeah. Wouldn't surprise me.
Or Google, for that matter, right?
Yeah.
Yes, good thing. It's not really hard to find us, I don't think.
Right. So we've been around for a little while now. If you Google up the name, we come up like 900 times. So.
I think you got to talk closer to the mic there, Link. You're fading away.
Closer to the mic.
There you go.
No, I was just kind of like leaning back and relaxing and listening to you guys, you know, chew the rag.
Chew the rag. Well, you know what? I'll go into one of my stories for this week. It's,
You went jogging and you had to go to the bathroom?
No. No, that would be hard to do because I go running or I use the wave machine at the gym and I would be very surprised if I had a membership after I used a bag there, so.
They frown upon that sort of activity at the
gym.
I couldn't
duck behind
a
weight
while
machine.
You're on the walking machine or whatever.
Yeah, they don't like that. Anyway, that's not acceptable gym
behavior.
And
here's the private weight room for Dan.
Yeah, what's that smell? Don't look in the bag. Don't look in the bag. Oh, we warned you. Yeah. That is not a protein shake.
Stay away from Dan when he's in the shower,
not
too.
Protein. Oh, that's just sick.
Shower.
Not right, man. Not just right.
I'm sorry. That's enough of that. that's wrong. Okay. I think I mentioned this before. We had our office has moved across town. We're now in Norfolk, or Norfolk, or Norfolk, as they call it over here, which is beautiful.
Norfolk?
Yeah, we have the entire building to ourselves, 20 stories. I'm on the 16th floor. Fantastic view. This morning, a aircraft
plane
carrier
whipping by.
No, well, yeah, planes go by, helicopters go by.
Where are the pics?
I do need to get some pics of that. An aircraft carrier went down the channel today. It was beautiful, awesome, really cool stuff. And it was my plan when I moved to the new building and things got situated that I would pursue putting Linux on my desktop at work as a permanent solution as opposed to running it through VMware. And, at the blessing of our system administrator, who's a Linux administrator, and he's a really great guy, he said, go ahead. The only caveat is I had to do a dual boot, so I did have to leave Windows on there because our operations do not support anything but Windows. So they need to make sure that they can boot into Windows and get whatever work they need to get done. That aside, I grabbed the EGF. Is this EGF, right?
Right.
Yeah, the latest Ubuntu, stable Ubuntu, and set about resizing the partitions of my NTFS Windows XP partition. And oh my God, did that take a long time. I let it run overnight. When I came back the next day, it was finally done. I tried to do it during the workday, but it took like 3 hours into it. It still wasn't done. So I resized the partition and set about installing Ubuntu. And of course, when I came back the next morning, the installation was ready to go. 20 minutes later, I was on a Ubuntu desktop and almost done installing all the updates and all the extra software I wanted. And I was psyched, man, because, oh, my God, this machine is blazingly fast now. Prior to this, I was running Arch Linux under VMware Workstation. And while it ran great, and I didn't usually have many problems with it, it's noticeably pokier than when I run Linux natively, of course, which is understandable. At the same time,
what do you mean pokey?
It's not sluggish, but you can tell a speed difference. I mean, things take a little longer to start up. It's not as fast. It was pretty well responsive. The biggest problem I had with running VMware player inside of Windows is every so often, like every 10-15 minutes, something would go, I don't know if something fired on the Windows side or whatever, but I'd end up with two cursors on the screen, two mouse pointers, and I would have the Windows, one would be in Windows and one would be in my Linux session, my KDE session, and when I move I'd have two cursors, so I'd actually have to like control alt out of the VMware session and click on the full screen window on VMware session to get back to just one cursor. And having to deal with that on a regular basis got kind of annoying. I don't know why it would do that. And of course, every day at 11 a.m., my whole system would lock up for about 10 seconds. Well, I don't know what the heck kind of update Windows was checking for, but it was Windows that was doing it. It wasn't the Linux side of things. So finally, I got into installing Ubuntu. Big difference. World of difference. I mean, it was beautiful. I will say half hour to 45 minutes that I spent doing the whole install and then, transferring files over from my old setup to the new one, which I did that in two ways. The first way I did it was by uploading some files and some bigger, larger files up to my Amazon S3 storage service and then pulling them back down on the Ubuntu side. The other way was using an SD card, transferring to a SD card and back into my Linux session. And this is the thing, it was great because I have a little flash SD card reader on my keychain, so I would plug that into the workstation when it was running VMware, Arch under VMware, and VMware would pick it up and it would be easily accessible under Arch, no problem. When I was done copying over, I'd unmount it. Now, the only other problem with that is once you unmount it and disable it under VMware, it automatically becomes enabled under Windows. And then Windows would sit there and poke along, and in a couple seconds later, it brings up that Explorer type window says, okay, I notice you have a mass storage device plugged in. What do you want to open? You know, like which application? So I would cancel out of it. Then I have to go down and right click on it and tell it to, remove the drive. And when it would remove the drive, it would bring up another window and it says, okay, pick what you want to remove. And it would be like USB mass storage device. And it was like, which one do you pick? You know, it identified it in three different ways. So I just picked the first one, and it was just a pain in the butt. Now, contrast that with when I booted back into Ubuntu, I popped that sucker in. It appears on my Nautilus desktop as a storage device. I double-click on it. I open up, pull the files off I want. I right-click on and say eject. It's done. That's it. It's done. I don't get all this other funky crap that goes along with it. It's done. It worked flawlessly. It worked perfectly. So I was really psyched about that. Now, I had two problems. Well, okay, I'll say kind of three. First off, I was tried to transfer over my Quanta settings because I customized the Quanta desktop or the Quanta application. And if you don't know what Quanta is, it's an enhanced editor, which I use for, the PHP coding at work. It does web development. It does some Java. It's got C capabilities, stuff like that. It's a nice little editor. It does what I like it for mostly is the bracket matching. So if I click on a bracket, it'll highlight what the match bracket is. So that I find that really handy. It does some code completion if you wanted to, particularly on the HTML side. But I don't like the default color layout for it. It's a white background, black text, and I changed that to a black background with a different color, lighter color text. It's my preference right there. And I wanted to carry those settings over, but for some reason, with KDE applications, a lot of them, they're in the .kde, .share, .apps. Oh, I'm sorry, .kde slash share slash apps, and then the application. When I tried to pull that over, those settings, for some reason, they wouldn't work under Ubuntu. I don't know if it's because the different version of Quanta was different. I doubt it. But it just, for some reason, would not accept it. So I had to reconfigure that. In addition to that, for some reason, my Amarok settings would not carry over. When I tried to fire up Amarok, it kept crashing. It wouldn't work. So I had to wipe out my original Amarok settings, which essentially what it boiled down to was I didn't carry over my podcast feeds like I wanted to. Maybe there was a different way to do it, but I don't know. I didn't spend too much time on it. It was simple enough for me just to add those other podcasts that I listened to at work right in there, and I was good to go. Thirdly, the biggest problem I had was SVN. The version of SVN, I had been using KDE SVN for a while, and I got kind of used to it and liked it as a graphical front end for SVN. KDE SVN was not available in the Ubuntu repositories that I could find it, or was it? I'm not sure it was, but I pulled down a few others. Link, what are some of the other SVN clients?
The only one that I actually use is KDE SVN. As far as like a GUI client?
Right.
Give me a second. I think I wrote something about this on my weblog. Looking at some of them. Let me use this search.
Anyway, there was a TK version. One that was built on TK. There was I think there was a plugin for Conqueror that would allow you to use SVN. And of course I pulled down, I transferred over my KDE SVN I got KDE SVN. I don't know. Anyway, long story short, every time I tried to do the SVN, the connecting, it would tell me that my version of SVN, my subversion version, was out of date compared to the version they were running on the server, which was the case. I believe they had upgraded on the server, which was a CentOS server, if I'm not mistaken, to version 1.4. And the one that comes with Ubuntu is 1.3-something. And it wasn't liking, the difference in versions. It wouldn't allow me to sync back and forth. So what I had to do was I just SSH, because our developmental environment is actually on the server, and we mount the server share for our dev environment, and we do, that's where the subversion repositories are kept. I just SSH to the server and do my SVN commits and updates on the command line. It works out just fine. But that's the only really bad problem I had was with Subversion, which is kind of a bummer. But, hey, you know, I'm beyond that. Like I said, things are lightning fast. I'm using GNOME on Ubuntu. It's beautiful. Things look really nice. I'm really satisfied, really happy with it. Two thumbs up. I get work done, I think, a little faster. I'm in a more comfortable environment, and I get to use Linux all day long. It's wonderful. It's a blessing. Now, that being said, I mean, there's a couple of nitpick issues I still have with GNOME. One is I wish by default they had a background switcher for your desktop. Like KDE kind of has one that'll cycle through all your pictures. I'm able to create, you know, a bash script that'll do that automatically for XFCE or Fluxbox, and I've done that. With Ubuntu, with GNOME, you got to do some really funky hacking with the XML files for the configuration. It's not as straightforward as just like, you know, WM background set or something else like that, or XFCE's background setting command. GNOME kind of does it a funky way. The other thing I have an issue with, which I hope that someday in a future version of GNOME they allow you to do this, is just about every other desktop that I run allows you to cycle through the virtual desktops using the mouse wheel over top of just the blank desktop, and it'll rotate around to the first one if you get all the way to the like your last one. GNOME doesn't have that capability. The only way you can cycle with the mouse wheel is to drag it down to the that pager. You go down to your pager and use the mouse wheel on that. And even then, if you go to the last one and you keep rotating, it won't switch back to the first one. Which I really wish it had that capability. I mean, it can't be that hard. Everybody else can do it. Why can't GNOME?
Why don't you just install KDE?
Because I don't want to run KDE. I like GNOME.
That's what I do.
You know what? Aside from that, I mean, by and large, I use the keyboard most of the time, so I press Control-Alt and then the arrow keys to go back. But maybe I missed it somewhere, but when I do that with the arrow keys, again, it doesn't cycle the first desktop back to the last one. I wish it did, but, you know.
Dan, you're going to get another 50 emails about setting up options and configuration. And,
you know. Yep.
Well, you know, I hope they do. I hope they really do. Because the only place I really see about being able to change workspaces is under the workspaces switcher preferences, which I get when I right-click on the pager. I don't think I see that in the preferences. Or I don't know where it is in the preferences. I've tried. I looked under keyboard shortcuts. I looked under desktop. You know, I looked under the mouse, seeing if there's a way I can do it. And I've looked. I even did a search on it for Google, through Google, and I have not found any way to allow me to switch desktops over by just, you know, rotating the mouse wheel on the blank desktop area. I really wish it would, but, you know, one day I'll get 100%. Of what I want. One day.
Yeah, he'll just install KDE and be done with it.
Install XFCE and then I'll be done with it, right? But
see, now, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because one of the things that I wish, like I run, for the most part now, I run KDE, and one of the things that I wish it would do would be to stop at the end, like when you use your scroll wheel, and it keeps rotating around through your screens. In Fluxbox, it stops at the last one, and it doesn't go back to the first screen again. And that's what I wish it would do under KDE, instead of just keep going and going and going and going and cycling through. I'd like it if it stopped, you know, at the first screen one way and stopped at the last screen the other way. I find it kind of annoying, you know, because every now and then you're doing your stuff and you'll mouse over an empty space on your desktop and accidentally whack your scroll wheel and it just, you know, flings you like 50 times or whatever. And
I turned that off. I couldn't stand that.
Well, I gotta have that because what I really should have is like, you know, four more monitors probably, but I really need the screen real estate. And I might have 50 different things open on my computer while I'm working. So I can't afford to, you know, have to go back down the screen every damn time or, you know, do the control F2 thing or whatever to get to a different screen. It's just, it's real convenient. I just wish it would stop at the end instead of keep going. You know what I mean?
I hear what you're saying.
You know what I mean?
I thought you could do that.
No, it just keeps going. I wish it would stop. It just keeps going.
Let me see. If I'm not mistaken, I just fired up Barrel on my computer, on my laptop. I should be able to now go switch back to and change to KDE, or maybe not. Yeah, no, I don't think it liked that. I thought I could get away with just going straight to KDE, but it didn't like that. No, I could have sworn you're able to tell it not to cycle through the desktop.
Well, you can tell it not to use the mouse switching for the desktop.
Well, I mean, I to do the wraparound. I thought you could set it to not do that.
Not that I have found.
Now you're gonna make me start up KDE just to figure that out.
See, you'll be hooked. Tomorrow morning he'll be doing he'll be doing the app get install KDE desktop or whatever.
Well, I can install it. I have it over here on my laptop.
For,
so
Ubuntu.
I have it on my Ubuntu laptop here, so. And it's telling me there's updates to be had.
He'll be doing it.
I'll do it right now, pal. We'll see who's laughing then.
As the show comes to a crashing halt.
Yep.
Blam! I didn't turn off that. I turned off the asterisk server.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be the first time.
I unplugged the router. No.
Oh, that was me.
That was funny that night, though.
Which one? When Pat unplugged the router?
Yeah, I banged into the router.
Yeah, nobody noticed.
The chair.
Oops.
Live and learn.
Yeah.
Well, one thing I was playing with, I tried using Kmail for a while, and I kind of liked it. The only problem was it started crashing on me all the time. And I'd leave it on forever, and then, you know, I'd come back and I'd see the stupid crash message. So, you know.
You know why that is? I'm absolutely convinced why that happens is because there's only really one good GUI mail client on
Thunderbird.
Linux, and it's Thunderbird. Everything else is not even worth trying, you know?
I like Silphied.
I used to like Silphied until Thunderbird came out. And now that Thunderbird is out, like, you can't beat it with a stick. And the reason that I know it's good is because it handles all my, you know, crappy, confugulated mail stuff that I do. You know, with the IMAP mail directories and the different SMTP clients for different, you know...
And running on all different ports and everything.
Yeah, exactly. And everything works on it. And every time I try to use something else, it's all screwy and wonky, and it ends up not handling my IMAP mail directories right, which pisses me off. And, you know, I always keep coming back to Thunderbird. And I should know better. I should just stick with it. And the only other thing that ever worked really well was Pine. You know?
I love Thunderbird. Hands down, I think that's one of my... Probably the one I use the most.
I'm more of a Mad Dog person myself.
2020, baby. But definitely.
And the Thunderbird would hurting on you.
I gotta agree with you there, Link.
It's good stuff, man.
It's damn good stuff.
Dave Yates says he lives in Gmail. I like Gmail, too.
Screw Dave
Yates.
You
know what I mean? I remember when Gmail first... Yeah, I remember when Gmail first came out, and everybody was complaining, oh, it's not private and all this other thing. And, you know, everybody can view it. Who gives a crap? You know what I mean?
I use it all the time. I use it all the time, and I don't send anything that I wouldn't care whether you read it or not.
You know,
it's a really good mail service, and it's free. You can't.
Have you guys tried Evolution? I mean,
yes.
I don't like it. I gave it a shot, man, and I can't for the life of me figure out how to do like all these, you know, different configuration settings.
I used it at work.
I mean, it looks nice.
I don't like it.
It works,
but I can't get it to do what I want.
It would be nice if our company got up with it in the same speed as the rest of the world and actually got the Evolution plugins working for the Outlook stuff, and then I'd be able to get all the calendar functions and stuff. But other than that, I mean, it works fine for me.
Well, let me, Alan, you can answer this for me.
Okay.
Speaking of email clients, I was seriously considering giving Evolution a shot at work, largely because Thunderbird doesn't have a calendar with it. You can get Sunbird, which works pretty well. But I thought to myself, we have somebody like our administrative assistant likes to send out meeting notices by sending out an Outlook, some type of Outlook scheduled meeting notice that's supposed to, you know, you click on it and goes right into your calendar.
And it goes right into your calendar.
Does that work under Evolution? Will Evolution pull it right into a calendar?
I believe it works if Outlook is running the Evolution plugins for it.
But if Outlook isn't,
which is only like the newer versions of Outlook will run that.
Wait.
On it. But if it's not...
Are you saying that Outlook has to have an Evolution plugin or Evolution has to have some kind of Outlook plugin?
Outlook has to be able to talk to the Evolution one properly. I don't know exactly how it works. I haven't really looked into it because it's, you know, it's not my area.
Okay.
But there is a, I don't know if it's a plugin. I don't know if plugin's the right word on it. But there is an exchange thing which will allow it to go over to Evolution so that when you click on one of their mail messages like that, it would go automatically into your calendar.
Uh-huh.
But unfortunately, my company's not running it either. So I just end up copy and pasting all over. You know, if they send out meeting notices, I copy and paste them into my own calendar and be done with it.
Okay.
So that's what you'd end up having to do. The problem is you can't reply to their messages either. You know, if you're in Outlook and, you know, you hit OK on it, accepts, and it also sends back a reply to say that you accepted it on it and puts it into their calendar that you accepted it. So you're not able to do that at this point.
So
unless, of course, it's running that plug-in or whatever you want to call it.
So what you're basically saying is I'm not going to get any enhanced functionality now by, you know, switching over to Evolution because it's not going to go in any kind of calendar when they send it unless they had the Evolution. So it has to be something. That's weird. I would expect that it would have to have something on the Evolution side, not that it would have to have something on the Outlook side.
Well, my Evolution has a setting for an Exchange server, but you know I can't get to any of my Exchange servers. So,
well, okay. Now here's the thing:
I have five of them to choose from in my company. I can't get to any of them.
We don't run
that. The only way I do stuff is I IMAP all the directories over.
But the email service that we use is not an Exchange server, so they just send an appointment.
I don't know. Yeah.
So it's not like
I don't know how that works.
Exchange. You know what? Maybe I'll have to give it a try. You know, it's a good example of what runs faster on my workstation at work is OpenOffice. That starts up really fast. Sorry, that was just a segue.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what, Link? I'm over here in KDE, and you might be right there.
I might. Damn, Link, you might be right.
I go over here to the multiple desktops, and it says mouse wheel over desktop background switches desktop, but there's nothing in here about whether it wraps around like in other desktops.
Right. Yeah.
I wonder if that's somewhere else. I'm surprised.
Some shit in it.
The boy be right.
Now that's how I knew that you are not my boss, because actually admitted it.
I can't believe it. Link's actually right this time. We can't let him know. It'll go right to his head. Shh. We'll fire him instead. We'll threaten him.
We're going to move him down to the basement. Link, could you go as far away from the
basement,
from the wall?
Man. Yeah.
And that red staple, can I have that?
Yeah, man. Now what I get is this steady parade and stream of people into my office all day asking me how to do stuff like open their email.
Do you hear that? Do you hear my wife yelling?
She has your bathwater ready?
Yeah. No American Idol tonight, Dan?
I don't know.
What happened to American Idol?
Usually it's cranked.
They didn't want to watch it tonight. I don't know. Something better must have happened. Must be the bath. The bath always gets them.
It's that built-in swimming pool.
Sucks the life force out of them.
Well, you know what kind of else annoyed me about KDE for some reason? I would lose the ability to...
Works faster than GNOME?
No, I don't notice that. for some reason...
Easy to configure?
The auto hide function on the taskbar would get spotty on me. Like, I go down to the bar, and I would... you can set it to auto hide, and then you just drag your mouse down to the bottom of the screen, and it would pop up again. It stopped working.
You go down to the bar for long enough, and everything gets spotty on you.
Yeah, that's it. No, but it would stop working for some reason. I don't know why.
Never had that problem. I generally don't auto hide my taskbars because I have all kinds of crap down there to, you know, icons to start different applications. So, you know, it's a lot easier for me to have them down there. And if I don't hide it, then that means that screen real estate is already in use and I don't have to worry about moving windows around and crap like that. So, you know.
Well, Link, I don't think you're supposed to. You're supposed to have that. That's. You're supposed to wrap desktops. So, not wanting to wrap desktop bucks the norm, and.
Yeah. No, but you know that's the way it is by default in Fluxbox, right? It doesn't wrap the desktops.
Yeah, no, I believe
it. Just stops on one end or the other, and that's the way I really like it. But you know, what are you gonna do?
Damn it.
Hey, Link, I got good news for you. The IT crowd is coming back for another season.
I know, I saw that. Isn't it awesome? Can't wait. Good show.
Fire up BitTorrent.
You bet.
Yeah.
Sitting here looking at my MacMall magazine, Pat. You want me to save this one for you, too?
Sure. I'll use it for toilet paper. If I had a bird, I'd put it at the bottom of the
bird. See, now you guys all said, but you know what? Pat just redid his man cave, and you know what? You go down there, and why he doesn't take pictures for you is because you go down there, and you can walk around the corner, and he's got the colored iMac pictures up on the wall and stuff like that.
He's got apples there.
His little temple of Steve Jobs.
Steve,
it's like an Apple store.
Yeah, it is, man.
It's well lit. Everything's bright and
white. He doesn't want you to see his iPod. And, you know.
There's no corners. It's all rounded.
Yeah. All nice and white.
There's only one button in the whole basement.
There's a picture
nice
of
little, airport.
There's a there's the the old Einstein Think Different picture with the Apple logo on it.
Mm-hmm.
There's the shrine to Steve with like incense burning underneath it.
I don't know. I got the five Apple. The IMAX in the circle there on my wall, so.
See, yeah, you got us a nice poster, man.
A friend of mine gave me that poster.
Nah, he wasn't a friend of yours. Friends don't let friends run Apple.
Sorry.
I actually walked past the Apple store or in the mall right next to where I work, and you could just
feel... And did you keep walking?
You could feel the pretension coming out of there.
Keep walking, my friend.
I kept
keep walking.
I looked in disgust as I walked by. There was some big ass ugly looking thing, which I think was an airport station. It looked like a giant butt plug. sitting on the desktop somewhere. I'm like, my God, that's awful. That should like have a. This should be like a plant holder slash airport base station. It was just. It was huge.
Excuse me.
Yeah, but no, I didn't stop in.
But it's Apple, so it's beautiful.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Because they are.
They should. They should make like an airport. Somebody should come out with a with an airport base station butt plug. That would be hilarious. Yeah, only me.
Only you would want something like
that. The eye plug.
Now they're going to come after you for that one.
Yeah.
You use the eye in the name.
It's the B plug.
The B plug. Oh, whoops. Well, sorry. Sorry. What do they call? No, it's just an airport. They should have called it the I airport. The I station.
I puke.
Meanwhile, Pat's typing on his new PowerBook.
Yeah.
His new MacBook, anyway, sorry.
It's interesting that you bring up the whole, you know, you program in PHP thing. And, of course, I do that too. Seems to be a, you know, seems to be the going thing these days. And I've heard it. Even Pat has dabbled in a little PHP in MySQL in his day.
Don't tell anybody.
Fun language.
I have on my website a forum with all kinds of PHP projects that I am currently working on. I would love to get some people actively involved in that. You know, maybe we can all learn a little bit of this stuff together. So, you know, if you guys want to head on over to there and join in the fun, that would be cool.
Sure. You know, actually, I should probably do more of that than playing Warcraft.
World of Crackcraft?
Yeah. That would probably be a good thing to do.
We might have to have an intervention for Dan. So.
Intervention. It's the wife's fault. She bought it for me. She made me buy it.
Yeah, she made you buy it.
She did.
She doesn't want to spend any time with you anymore, Dan.
She made me do it.
I said it was terrible. Whew. But that's the way it goes.
Yeah.
So what's in the news this week?
Lots of schools are adopting Linux around the world.
Yes, indeedy.
Talk about that school in California. 5,000 Linux desktop / thin clients.
Well, there's the school in California. There's the school in Bexley in Columbus. You know, Bexley School in Columbus.
Yeah. There's the schools
in
India.
There's a big article today about Japan possibly making it a policy to adopt a lot of Linux in their schools, which is, you know, really cool.
Yeah, no, I think it's really cool too, and I've heard on a couple other podcasts, Linux Reality, a lot of Linux links, Dave Yates, and where else did I hear it? Somewhere else brought up the topic of Linux in schools, free software in schools. Why isn't it being adopted more so than it actually is? And I'd like to throw my two cents in, because I was going to email Chess Griffin, or actually send him an audio recording, but I know Dave Yates also brought this up, and it was also brought up on the Linux Action Show. And I was going to throw my, you know, to throw my two cents at all these people is a waste of my time, right? And their good time, when I could just, you know, espouse the views I have on this show, where my views belong, correct?
Yeah.
So, you can wander over there once in a while, Dan. It's okay.
No, I do. I go over there. I like all those shows. I like participating in their forums, even if I have to know Roman Polish to participate in Dave Yates' forum. Polish, what is that called? Polish what?
Reverse Polish notation?
Yeah, reverse Polish notation. That's it. Not Roman Polish. Reverse Polish notation. Anyway, what I was going to say is I listen to these shows and people wondering why Linux isn't more accepted in the school districts. And having worked in a school district and having gone through the bureaucracy, I have some thoughts on that, which I'm not sure if I fully explained on a show in the past, but I'll just do it again because we have an hour and 15 minutes, and what else do we have to talk about, right?
Hey, why not?
Why not? Okay. Now, as I've been thinking about this a lot the past couple of weeks, and first off, you know, one of the things that we need to look at again, and with a lot of these issues that I feel with Linux acceptance in general, it's not one or two things, okay? It's like a handful of things together, because one or two things are easily, are not insurmountable. You can get past that. You know, the whole argument that why is an open office used as opposed to Word? You shouldn't be teaching a product. You should be teaching a concept, okay? Word processing. Right. People should know how to do word processing. So why don't, you know, why don't you take advantage of open office as opposed to Word? And that's a very valid and wonderful argument. And I agree 100%. But, you know, there's other factors that get involved here that make, you know, those single arguments or those one or two arguments a lot more muddier. First off, and it's kind of hard to approach these without, you know, talking about them as a whole. But if you look at, first off, the technology, the software, okay, that's involved in a school district. By and large, the software has kind of evolved over the past 10 years. And it some of it's going towards a web-based system, but a lot of it still remains a single-use, you know, per workstation installable piece of software or a client-server model. Now, about 10, 15 years ago, the predominant force in the school districts seemed to be Macintosh. A lot of Apples, a lot of OS, old OS 7.5, OS 8, OS 9, was the predominant operating system in school districts, had the most popularity, and therefore a lot of the software that was developed foremost with Apple and Apple's operating system in mind there. So, you know, just about every software package you can get had an OS, an Apple OS version. Then along came Windows 95 and Windows 98, and they started kind of producing software that would also run under Windows. And then you had the switch where Apple's operating system kind of evolved into OS 10. And now you had a situation where a lot of software that was built for old OS, classic OS, or the original Apple operating system, and was built for 95. Now on the Windows side, when you had to transition from 98 to 2000 XP, you had a lot of applications that didn't run properly. Still a lot of DOS-based or 16-bit applications that were mimicking a 32-bit environment would run in there, but, you know, again, stability-wise, not so well under 2000 and XP. So as the operating systems evolved, the educational software didn't really keep up with the pace, because again, school districts are seen as typically not being as well to do and as fast to upgrade or evolve as a business sector or other sectors of the economy. And which is true. The wheels of first thing I learned in when I worked at the school district was the gears of progress change slowly at a school district. The wheels of change turn slowly at a school district. So school districts not having the big budgets that corporations have usually take advantage of the hardware and software that they have and use it to their capability for as long as they can. For instance, one of the concepts that I've always heard is, you get new technology into the high schools and you trickle down the older technology to the middle schools and then into the elementary schools, because the high schools are sending students out into the world. They should have to learn more of the business type applications and do more work with word processing and everything and research. Therefore, they should have the better systems. And by the time a system, you know, gets trickled down to the elementary school, it might be 3 or 4 years old. So, you know, up until about 5 or 6 years ago, you know, when OS X had been around for a while, it just started coming out, you had systems that the operating system software wouldn't run on too well in the newer systems. And then it would only run in classic mode under OS X. So now you have that same situation going on where they've just kind of migrated some of the software over to either a web-based system or over to OS X. It's taken a long time, and you throw Linux in the mix. Now, Linux coming out of, you know, not necessarily out of left field, but there isn't the dearth of software that's available under Windows and the Mac environments that's available under Linux, which is kind of, you know, unfortunate. But on the same token, a lot of this other software that I've noticed, the educational software that would be installed, would take advantage of technologies like Shockwave and Flash, which to me says it's not, you know, beyond the realm of possibility that they could be ported over to a Linux environment. So that being said, one of the things that's hard to convince a school district to move to any other platform is because they've invested so much money in the platform they already had. When we moved from Apple software, Apple environment in the elementary schools to Windows 98 machines back in the day, it was a lot of thought and a lot of concern went into it because it had a huge volume of library of software that was geared more towards the Macintosh. So when we moved over to the Windows machines, this was about 2 years before OS X came out, we had to purchase all new software for these machines to work in the computer labs, particularly in the elementary school. So now they went through the whole process of purchasing all this new software, and 4 years later, lo and behold, OS X comes out. The decision is to go, well, instead of buying more PCs for the elementary schools, let's go back to OS X. Let's buy some OS X mobile labs. So we get a bunch of PowerBooks in there and iBooks. Now we got the same situation again. All the software they bought, which they tried to buy dual platform if they could, but at the time, dual platform meant old OS, classic OS, as opposed to OS X. So now you move over to the new OS X, a lot of that software doesn't necessarily work, which in a sense they were almost in the same position if they went to Windows XP. Some of that software would not run properly under Windows XP. Or if it did run, you'd have networking issues and all sorts of stuff. So you might say to yourself, well, if a school district has to change its software every 3 or 4 years because of this, why not Linux? Why can't we look at putting Linux in there? And it's a good argument because when you actually look at the history of the software in the school districts, from where I came from and from other school districts I have seen, because the operating systems evolve, and when the operating systems evolve, the technology forces you to upgrade all your other software, it would seem like a perfect fit to drop Linux in there because it'd take advantage of older hardware, older, you know, less system resources required, and you could extend the life of your software. Great argument, but the downside is there just isn't the same kind of software available under Linux that's available under OS X or Windows. A catalog comes in the mail, and, you know, these people are very well influenced by catalogs from Scholastic and other resources. They go off to conferences, and a lot of these conferences talk about software available only on the Windows and Mac platforms. Very little is mentioned about Linux or any other operating system because it's just not supported. So you have that constant bombardment of software available for non-Linux platforms, which is one difficulty. Even though, if you look at the trend in history, it would make perfect sense to drop Linux in there to extend the overall life of your hardware and software. So I think as we do see more adoption, I'm hoping that some of these educational companies will start looking at producing web-enabled or cross-platform applications that do support Linux. That's one area. All right. Another area that you look at, you know, looking at the hardware in general, when you go out and purchase desktop computers, you don't get a huge choice in the school districts. There's not a huge choice of what you can buy operating system-wise. You're either going to buy, you know, from a company that's going to sell you a Windows desktop, or you're going to buy from a company that from Apple, and they're going to sell you an OS X desktop. Not a lot of places advertise or even, you know, provide you with the capability of desktops with Linux pre-installed. Now, you can get servers, but not necessarily desktops. Now, school districts do volume pricing. There's organizations called PEPM, and a couple other states do this too, where instead of a school district saying, okay, we want to upgrade computers, we're going to be looking to buy 600 computers this year, sending it out to bid, and you get companies that will come back and, you know, like Dell will provide a bid, HP will provide a bid. You have your local companies that will submit bids, and generally speaking, the one that comes in the lowest is the one who usually wins the bid. Well, some states have foregone that process by, instead of companies having the bid, companies put out an agreed-upon price of how much, you know, their desktop or whatever it is going to cost the school. So every school in that district, that's the price that, you know, Dell will sell the desktop. This is the price that HP will sell the desktop. So you go to this place and you look at the pricing on the desktops. And, of course, as you know, in the United States, it's really difficult to buy a system without an operating system pre-installed. And school district-wise, you don't really get a lot of choices. Like I said, it's either Windows or Apple is what you're going to get. So you go to someplace like Dell, and they sell you a desktop system for, you get a business class desktop system for a price, about the price you pay for a low-end consumer system. There's significant price reductions on the education side, on hardware, number one. So you go out and buy 500 or 600 systems, and it costs you, you know, the same amount as what it would cost a company to buy like maybe 100 or 200 of those systems. And they come pre-installed with Windows. Or, you know, you get a deal from Apple and you get the same thing. So it's difficult for somebody, a company sometimes to get or even pursue getting a Linux desktop. I think a lot of that is changing, but the options presented to school districts are not OSS friendly or FOSS friendly at this point. And hopefully that'll change. Now you can go with a local vendor, a clone machine that's going to put together a clone machine, a white box for you. And generally speaking, you know, what you get from a local vendor is better service because they are, you know, they're in their community. They do want to cater to you. They want your business, but you pay a little more typically than you would from like a big OEM like Dell because Dell's got the volume pricing. Same holds true on the software side. The software pricing for school districts for educational system is, you know, about a third to a quarter of what you would pay for in the public sector and about half of what you pay for in the business sector. And that those savings increase as you do volume pricing, volume licensing. Now, you can do volume licensing by a school district, which, you know, you might say you pay $68 for a full license of Office Professional. That's significantly cheaper than going out and buying the full version at the consumer price. So $68. Now that price even goes down further if a bunch of school districts form a consortium and purchase the volume license as, you know, across four or five districts. And that was being done at the school district that I work at. There was an IU that catered to, I think, like the eastern half of Pennsylvania. And they could get, you know, a copy of Office for like $40. So you would take advantage of it. Well, no, yeah, okay. Now you might say, okay, $40 is $40 more than OpenOffice. Okay. Now, if you buy, you know, if you want 1,000 computers, 1,000 copies of Office, the license of 1,000 computers is going to cost you like $40,000. That's $40,000 different, you know, an expense than using OpenOffice, which is zero. And the benefit about using OpenOffice is now not only can you use it on all your computers in the school, you can use it on OS X, you can use it on Windows, you can use it on Linux. You can send it to the kids, give it to the kids to take home. They can use it on their computers at home regardless of what operating system you have. And you can give it to your teachers, and everybody could be using OpenOffice. Everybody could be using the same application and pretty much seamlessly do the exact same thing they do on Office that they don't do under Windows. Okay? And you can almost make the same argument with Linux. You can send all that software home with everybody who wants to use it. Anybody can use it. All right? It almost makes sense. You are saving $40,000 in software costs, at least for Office alone. And that $40,000 could be used somewhere else in the school district. Okay? Budgets for school districts vary. Where I came from, where I was working, was a fairly well-to-do school district. Our technology budget was public record. Of course, all these budgets are public record. I would say anywhere between $100,000 to $500,000 a year. depending on how much was allocated. The way allocation goes is, you know, school districts get a big chunk of money, and then different departments have to start bidding. They carve up that money and see where it would best fit the needs of the school district. So you figure, okay, if a school district is given $100,000 for an annual budget for their technology, and out of that $100,000 comes $40,000 worth of office licenses, okay, and you think about that, that's just to run office. Now, if you do the volume, you know, the annual licensing where you're paying like $15,000 to $20,000 a year for a 3-year period for to run office, the subscription model, which is what Microsoft would want you to do, that's a significant portion out of your budget just to run the software. With that extra $15,000 a year, you can invest that into your infrastructure. You can invest that into other areas in the school district. But, you know, the way it is a lot of people look at it and say, we get such a significant discount. It's almost, you know, worth it to pay that small price to use it. But on a large scale, you can look and say, wow, $15,000 to $40,000 in savings of using OpenOffice, it almost baffles your mind. And you say, where's the disconnect here? Okay? So, you know, looking at it, we got two arguments here so far. The software that's available to the school districts on the proprietary software on the and the commercial software on the Windows and Apple Macintosh side far outshine the offer. Not outshine, but the quantity is far greater on their platforms than is available on Linux right now. And you get more, there's more of a presence that they have in the academic environments through catalogs, through seminars and everything. They make an effort to sell their software, so it's more well known. Secondly, the cost of running Windows or any other software and hardware, because, you know, buying hardware is significantly cheaper on, you know, on the educational side, but at the same token, it's still, when you look at the large and purchasing large amounts of this, it comes out to significant costs, whereas if you would invest in OpenOffice significantly, it would be a significant saving. So, you know, you look at both sides there. Those are two nails right there that make it difficult for FOSS and Linux to get into a school district. The amount of software not available and the fact that the cost of the software and hardware is significantly cheaper than the business and consumer section. Now, to top all this off, a school district is a huge bureaucracy. Okay? You have teacher unions, you have students, you have parents, you have PTAs, you have the school board, you have the administration. And before any kind of decision or purchasing decision can generally be made, approval has to go through a lot of different faces, a lot of different pens, a lot of different bodies, primarily the administration, the teachers, and the school board. And, of course, when you have the school board involved, you also get the community voice in there, too. So one of the things, one of the other hurdles that I've seen is they always talk about what is business using, what's going on in the rest of the world, and one of the excuses for not going ahead with OpenOffice or other operating systems, or even the excuse that we had against going with Apple, is Windows is what's used in the corporate America. Windows is what we should be using on our desktops. We should prepare students for the job that they're, you know, the operating system and the software that you're probably going to be using in the job they get out of high school or when they go off to college. And, you know, you can't really argue with that right now because, what, 90% of all desktops are running Windows, 90% of, you know, probably office products, products using the office in college are Microsoft products at this point. It's the dominating software package. Therefore, they feel that students should be exposed to that type of software and that type of environment, and that is what's considered the, quote, standard. So you want to change this. You want to maybe bring in Apple, and Apple maybe instead of using Word and Microsoft Office on Apple, you want to use the tools that come with Apple's iWork suite which is, you know, pretty much compatible with Windows, Microsoft's Office. You can read Office documents, even with OpenOffice. But then you get people complaining, well, you know what, I want my student to be learning Office because that's what I use at work, and that's what they're probably going to be using when they get a job. Therefore, I think you should be using Windows. You know, you come out and say something like Linux, and most people really haven't even heard of Linux. So it becomes a problem of perception that why are we giving, you know, why are we providing this to our students when they should be using what the rest of the world uses? So you have a perception problem there too. Uneducated people who aren't educated about Linux, who don't really know what it is, learn that, you know, their little Johnny or little Susie aren't going to be using, you know, the same software that everybody else in the world's using. You know, we want our students to have a top-notch education. We want them to use the applications and products that are used in the business world. Therefore, we think they should be using Windows. Again, it's kind of a cop-out excuse because the other side of the argument says you shouldn't be teaching students about an operating system or a specific desktop. You teach them how to use programs, how to use, you know, the general concepts behind using a computer, not that you have to use Windows or OS X or KDE or GNOME. But, you know, because a student can generally transition between all those operating systems or all those computer products because they have more exposure to it. All right, so the students don't really necessarily care. It's more the parents and the teachers and the business ties that they have are more concerned about changing the status quo. So that makes it difficult to do. You also have, when trying to put together a curriculum, okay, trying to put together integrating technology into the curriculum, one of the downsides of Linux and free and open source software is there isn't a lot of curricular material. You go out and get a textbook on typing or a business textbook. The applications that they reference in those business textbooks, in the typing application textbooks and everything, are all Microsoft Office-based. Some of them used to do WordPerfect, but majority have now switched to just Microsoft Office because it's considered, quote, the business standard. There isn't a book out there that references OpenOffice that I've seen. Textbooks don't usually do that. Applications that come bundled with these books only run under Windows, maybe some under OS X. So it makes it a lot more difficult to choose curricular material based upon the fact that a lot of it's written from a computer viewpoint upon Microsoft products. Microsoft spends a lot of time and invests in a lot of education resources so that their products do get out there. We don't have that kind of backing in the FOSS community right now. There are awesome resources online. Anybody who wants can go read the source code and get support and everything and get a dearth of information and assistance through IRC channels and all sorts of in the community in general. But that cohesive documentation and curricular material is not yet available, which makes it difficult for a school district to adopt, unless a teacher's willing to go out there and write their own curricular material and produce their own material, which by and large a lot of them don't have the time to do that. They're already, you know, overworked to begin with. So that's another big hurdle that we've had experience in with getting other operating systems and programs into the school district. Now, I fortunately had a boss. My supervisor was very interested in using this, you know, open source solutions and technology and incorporating it into onto the machines in addition to Microsoft Office and some of the other ones, and even encourage teachers to learn more about it. You go to seminars and you're starting to see a little more trickle down from the open source solutions and different things, but it's still not as pervasive as proprietary solutions. Hopefully, we'll see a change of that, and some of those proprietary solutions will move to a Linux desktop or being more cross-platform. So there's a bunch of arguments that I have seen with regards to getting Linux in the school districts. Oh, and another thing, another big way that technology gets into school districts is through partnerships and grants. Companies, you know, Apple, Dell, HP, Microsoft, all like to provide, partner with school districts and provide grants of technology and software to get their products into the school district. And in a sense, you know, it's a win-win situation. It's a win for the school district because they get software and technology, and it's a win for the company because they get their products in there, and more than likely, you know, the next time that they need to purchase products, they're going to go to those same companies because they already are invested, and they already have the technology in there. So, you know, it that also makes it difficult for Linux to get in there. Now, larger school districts, more well-to-do school districts I've seen are more difficult to get Linux into those school districts. Now you have inner city school districts that don't have the financial support that some of the more well-to-do school districts, small schools, charter schools, small rural schools that don't have a large population, don't have a big budget, seem to be more receptive to Linux and open source solutions. If they get technology donated from businesses, trickle down, usually, you know, desktops that are 2 or 3 years old seem to be more receptive to trying out Linux and open source solutions on the desktop because they don't have the budget, which is a great place for it to come in. So, you know, we're going to see some of that. I was, as I thought a lot about this, I was really surprised when the article came out today about the 5,000 desktops in California switching over to Linux and Linux thin client solutions. And I think that's phenomenal. And as I look more in the past couple of weeks, I think we're seeing like, man, there seems to be this like huge engine building up here that more companies seem to be looking at providing Linux solutions, looking at Linux on the desktop. School districts are starting to go to it. Other countries are starting to go to it. It seems to be a huge momentum is really building up. And I hope that this momentum is going to continue and tip the scales so that we're going to see more wide adoption within school districts. But as it stands, like what I have seen, there are a lot of, there's a lot of weight we need to get to heap on. There are a lot of things that kind of need to change. And, you know, as more of this, more Linux gets out there, I hope that the time, the opportunity becomes ripe for school districts to really embrace it, because I think there is a wonderful opportunity there.
Right on, Dan.
Yeah. Any comments or
I have a comment. I think a lot of the reasons why they stick with Windows, I really think some of these school districts are on the take. The person who's in charge of determining what software they go with, they get wined and dined by, you know, these sales reps from Microsoft. You know, who knows what happens behind closed doors?
Oh, you know what? And you are. I don't think it's so. What you're saying is valid, but I don't think it's as overt as the whining and dining. I know that we have had salespeople come and take us out for, quote, business lunches and, you know, doing that kind of thing. And it does, you know, that kind of sales tactic, that kind of tactic does make you more encouraged to purchase their product or to partner with them. They do a fantastic job. Apple comes around every time, you know, our budget comes out. That's when the Apple representatives come knocking on your door with, you know, their attitude isn't, you know, hey, I hope you buy Apple. Their attitude is, you know, here's what we have for you this year. And this is what's going to, you know, how we're going to make technology in your school district that much better. This is what Apple can do for you. And they do a really, you know, compelling sell in the solutions that they provide. Microsoft kind of does the same thing. They're always looking to and willing to go that extra step to get their technology in your schools. You don't see that in the Linux side because they don't have a marketing strategy like that. They don't have a marketing scheme.
Yeah, we don't have people, you know, with unlimited bank accounts to go take prospective clients out to the local titty bar for lunch.
Well, I won't say they went out to the local titty bar. But no,
I'm sure that happens.
I mean, but you know, that's what a salesman's supposed to do. That's a mark of a good salesman. You know, get your customer to buy your product.
Get them into the titty bars for lunch.
The problem is, and this is the juxta of the problem as I see it. I'm sure everybody's going to disagree with me like they normally do.
without a doubt. I already disagree
with you.
You're
wrong, Link.
You don't
You're
even,
wrong.
Just shut up
the
right now.
The problem is that they always put the pointy-haired boss in charge of the resources, and the pointy-haired boss generally does not know how to find his ass with both hands upon a cheek. normally, you know, the people that are in charge are making technology decisions do not know anything about technology. That's, you know, my whole point in a nutshell. It happens. It's happened at every company I have ever worked for. The person in charge of the technology does not know what they're talking about, generally. Usually there's some kind of fanboy, Microsoft or Apple or what have you. And, you know, they learned how to do WordPerfect, damn it, and that's what we're going to use. You know? Or whatever the product is. Has nothing to do with actually teaching anybody anything or learning anything or
nobody got fired for buying Windows.
They should have.
Or a Microsoft product.
You know, and there's valid, you make valid points right there, and it's true. And you know, it's hard for, I would say, a person who's in that type of position to not go with what they're familiar with what they've always used, to judge from their experiences. And, you know, I hope that perception changes as, you know, the more technically savvy students that are growing up today are being exposed to not just Microsoft products. They're being exposed to, you know, Apple and Linux and all these other stuff on their own. And the, like, people that I meet that are 10 years younger than me, that are in the technology job, in the technology environment, are using Linux, are using OS X and all sorts of different operating systems. You know, 10 years ago, when I would bring up Linux, you know, people would, you know, in my field would have no idea what the heck I was talking about. They were Microsoft, Novell people, occasionally an Apple person here or there, but I think that the community of the tech community in general is expanding beyond that. I mean, you have hardened tech people now who've been using Windows for years. They get exposed to Linux these days. You hear them all the time on Chess's show, and occasionally on Dave Yates gets emails like this too, talking about how they've started using Linux, and you know, it's just those one or two applications, and then they're going to ditch Windows forever. I mean, you hear more of these stories every day. And I think as, you know, this generation and next gets into the workforce, you're going to see more acceptance of better choices than Windows. But you're right. I agree with you, Link, right there. I think there's a lot of that involved. In fact, I know where I used to work at, there was one of the guys on the school board who was very influential, particularly when it came to technology. He was looked upon as the go-to guy for technology because he was a programmer, a software developer who worked in a large company in the area, a large corporation, and his job, he was a Microsoft developer. He developed software for Windows. Therefore, you know, his solutions, his decisions, and his influence was behind using Microsoft products because that's what he worked in. That's what his company used. It was a very successful corporation, and therefore that's what the students should be using. And he was very, very adamant about using Microsoft technology. So you do have people with personal agendas involved too.
Certainly.
Now, this guy wasn't only that. I mean, he was willing to, if you could present a case and present a convincing case where, you know, another type of technology would make sense and be useful, he was willing to listen to that. He just said, you know, his idea was, bring me the argument, show me the proof, and, you know, we'll green light it. But it was very difficult to do that, particularly at the time. But, you know, switching kind of the focus a little bit, the gears a little bit of this conversation, and reading a lot of these articles about what's coming out with companies saying why they're switching or looking at switching to Linux and not going with Vista, and companies who are moving to Linux who have tried it. It's very interesting to see that.
Government agencies, too. You had the story about the FAA and a couple other government agencies. They're not going to go to Vista.
Right. And a lot of things that I'm hearing out of this is, one, cost. It doesn't seem to be a viable business choice. They get to take advantage, better advantage of their older hardware and technology. It lasts longer. It's more secure. Overall, it's less administrative headaches than running under Windows. I mean, you got all these case studies that are coming out now in support of real life scenarios in support of Linux and open source solutions. And I gotta say, I mean, I'm really pumped when I read a lot of these, and I'm wondering, you know, Microsoft's got to be shitting their pants.
More so than ever.
I mean, I can't get a real feel for how well Vista is actually doing. I mean, on some regards, I hear like the pundits generally speaking, "Oh, Vista's great. Vista's wonderful. It's really wonderful. It's the best thing ever. It's great. Microsoft's really got a winner with Vista." But on the other hand, I hear a lot of people saying, you know, it's not a wow factor. It's kind of the entry level cost is way too high. There's too much concern over, you know, is it really secure? Is my software going to run on
Service
it?
Pack 3.
Yeah, there's a lot of confusion and skepticism surrounding it, and it almost seems like I hear the other side saying, you know, this is going to kind of be the flop for Windows. I don't know where it is. It's probably somewhere in the middle, but it's really hard to get a beat on it.
I've heard both sides of it. I've heard some reports where they say that, they're really happy the way it's selling. You know, all these new machines are coming out with it preloaded, blah, blah, blah. And then I hear the flip side of it is, you know,
that's how you're getting it, though.
A lot of companies are not looking to switch. There's no benefit for them to switch. It's all negatives.
It's a lot more money. It's not proven technology.
All the hardware is going to work with it.
And so on and so forth.
Device drivers aren't that great.
They're perfectly good, you know, 2 gigahertz computers that are, you know, essentially useless. So.
Well, Gorkon says, don't think they're shitting their pants. Microsoft can screw a release up totally and people will still use it. I'm not saying that people aren't going to use it. And they already, you know,
they're
almost
the sheeple out there.
Yeah,
right?
It's almost like they can't really use because they have the OEM lock-in. They have the corporate lock-in right now. And eventually people are going to have to upgrade. But I'm seeing a lot more people, you know, a lot of heads are turning and saying, well, wait, maybe we don't have to. Maybe we could do something different. Maybe now's the time to switch. Maybe. And who knows what it's going to be like a year from now. But I just feel like there's this, you know, we're coming to a tipping point here. That's what I think. Soon. It's building up too much momentum. It's going to blow up.
I think what's happening is, you know, Linux has progressed a long, long way, right? Mac OS X is a good-looking operating system. It's very usable. It's a good-looking operating system, you know, regardless of whether or not, you know, techie people like it or whatever. It's a good-looking operating system. It's easy for a general user to use.
I don't know. I think businesses aren't going to go to Mac. They're going to go to Linux, it seems.
Businesses are going to run whatever the hell the vice president or the president of the business runs at home. That's what they're going to do, because the president of the business is going to go, if the president of the business goes home and uses his new Macintosh to surf the web and write his little spreadsheet or whatever, when that president comes into the office and wants to get a new computer to do his thing, he's going to want what he's comfortable with, which is going to be whatever he's running at home. You know, but the point that I'm getting to about this is these operating now Linux and Mac OS X are more popular because they're getting easier and easier for other people to use. You know, Linux has come to the point, especially with like distributions like Ubuntu and Fedora and stuff like that. They've come to the point now where they're very, very easy to set up. All of us here know damn well that an average Ubuntu install is much, much easier to get going than your average Windows install. You know? All the drivers were already there. You have to screw with anything anymore. Everything just pops up and works. You don't have to buy extra software to get things to work, and et cetera, et cetera, and so on and so forth. So I think as more people come into contact with things like OS X and Linux in whatever capacity, the more familiar people are with it, the easier it's going to be to get businesses away from doing, you know, doing the corporate Microsoft thing. You know what I'm saying?
I hear exactly what you're saying. I agree with you.
I don't know. It to go out and run Mac, they got to go out and get all new hardware. You know, businesses that are running, you know, Intel-based x86 boxes, you know, white boxes on a corporate desktop, it's just easy that for them to, you know, keep the same machines and install Linux.
No, it's not, because they don't keep the same machines. Businesses don't use the machines over and over again forever.
They use them for quite a while. My old machine that I had on my desktop at work before the last one that I got about a year ago, I had that machine for about 6 years, man.
I have a G66 laptop on my desk.
Yeah, it's a piece of shit. It's one of those Dell Optiplexes, man. What a piece of garbage.
Yeah, but for the same price, they could have easily gone out and gotten you, you know, a Mac.
I don't know about that.
Maybe a Mac Mini or something like that.
They're pretty cheap machines, man. They paid maybe $300 for those things, I bet you.
The minis, yeah. Probably.
No, the Optiplexes.
What about the Optiplex?
It's a cheapy machine. It's like a mini ITX form factor. There's some bizarro custom configuration that, you know, only the motherboards that's designed specifically for them will fit into that box.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There's the Dell's Optiplex series. A lot of Dell's hardware is kind of like that pseudo-proprietary. It's hard to replace, like, motherboards. And you have to be careful with some of those Optiplexes when you get the half-height desktops and the compact ones that you need to get half-height cards. So you can't easily switch out, like, video cards. And most of those have 90% of their peripherals on board. NIC card, sound card, video card are all on board. Technologies there.
Yep, just like mine. That's what I'm running at work. I love it. Runs Ubuntu like a bat out of hell.
Right. And all the hardware breaks. Works, right?
Yeah, all the hardware works, but here's the thing. Like, everybody complains about them because, you know, they have all the onboard components and stuff like that. What if your NIC card breaks or whatever? What if it does, right? If my computer, I'm a programmer, right? If my computer breaks, they're going to get me another computer. That's all there is to it. So far, you know, I've been using it for, what, over a year now? It's on all the time. Works like a top. Haven't had a complaint, you know? If it does break, I'll just get another one.
Those Dells, it seems like people around me, like every week it seems someone's having problems with their machine is starting to lock up, and they come and they replace the memory, they replace the CPU, they replace the power supply, they replace the motherboard.
They need to replace the operating system.
Yeah, that's a start.
That's probably what the problem is. That's probably what the problem is. No, seriously. Probably what the problem is. You know, just like every other white box, when you get Windows on it and you use it for a while, it starts to slow everything down, and then, you know, maybe somehow you get a virus in there or something, and it doesn't boot right anymore, and you get the AOL toolbar on your freaking browser, and you can't get rid of that, and then somebody installs, you know, Weatherbug or some shit. And, you know, it just spirals down from there. But what they really need to do is, you know, next time you get somebody who's complaining their computer's broken over their patch, stick a Nopix disk in or something like that. When everything works,
then
say, hey, you know what's broken? It's your operating system.
No. I must need to get a better machine to run Vista.
Right.
So did you guys read about the first big thing to come out of the Novell-Microsoft agreement is a open source or ODF to OpenXML document converter, I think it is.
Yes.
Have you looked into it yet?
No.
I did. I was interested in it. I went to look at it and see. You know, it says it's available for download. Unfortunately, the only thing I could find was an RPM. And I would assume that's RPM geared more towards SUSE than maybe Mandriva or Fedora. So I'm not sure if it's open source, but they had the RPM there. So I'd be interested to know if it comes out for Ubuntu or Debian or anything else. Whether they have a source code for it. But I don't see anything on the download page regarding whether or not they have a source code. Maybe. What is an OXT file?
OXT?
Yeah.
Well, I know what ODT is.
What is OXT?
Let me ask JZA. He's the open office dude.
Oh. Under Linux... You're on the RPM under Windows. Save the downloaded ODF converter OXT file to disk. In OpenOffice, click Package Manager and click Add. Browse the location of the ODF.
The plugin.
Converter, yeah. But, yeah. So apparently the system requirements are going to require you to run either Novell Edition for Windows, OpenOffice Novell Edition for Windows, or OpenOffice for SUSE or OpenSUSE. I don't see anything here about there being a source package or anything. I could be wrong. Let me see in their open source. I don't know. I don't see anything in here. I could be wrong, though. It'd be interesting.
Yeah, you're wrong.
What do you mean I'm wrong?
I don't know. I'm just bullshitting with you.
I don't see anything on here. Whether it's under Novell Forge or... Maybe one of our listeners or maybe Ted Hager.
Can clue us in on that?
Yeah, Ted.
Well, JZA says OXT...
Slap us upside the head with the cluefish.
I like the XPS on Firefox... plugin.
All right, so apparently there's a plugin, but for the Windows version of OpenOffice, not for any other version. I don't know. Bum me out. Bum.
So what was, you were mentioning before, Dan, your experience with running, all this time you've been running, Linux under VMware Player on your work computer in order to get your work done.
Right.
And other than it being quirky with your, you know, mouse every 10 minutes or whatever, everything worked all right for you and that's, you know, you've been able to get your work done. What's your experience with VMware?
One of the nice things about VMware, particularly on the Linux side of things, is it emulates... standard Intel hardware. So regardless of what your network card or sound card is, it's very, very, very easy to get it running under VM, you know, under a VMware session, because it uses virtual devices and interfaces with your hardware devices through the Windows operating system. By and large, I mean, aside from that issue with the mouse going back and forth, you almost couldn't tell. Other than the fact it was a little noticeably, but not prohibitively sluggish. It wasn't like really slow. Now I gotta offer a caveat there with regards to that, because running Linux in VMware, the speed of running Linux, bringing up Windows, like Conquer Windows, bringing up you know, different applications, was still faster under VMware than it was under Windows natively. When I bring up my computer under Windows, it would sit there and hang for a while, and it would just take a long time to browse compared to running it, running through the file system under VMware, Conker under VMware. It ran perfect. It ran great. Now, I had a gig of memory in this machine, which probably helped. I allocated 512 megabytes to VMware to be used by the Linux session. So the memory was split right down the middle.
Right.
And, I mean, it was great. I didn't have really too many complaints. I did have to get used to not being able to use Control Alt and the arrow keys to move back and forth between my desktops, because when you hit Control Alt,
it pops you out of VMware.
So I had to, change that around. But those two things. The only other problem I had, which really you can understand, is, and what was nice about it though, is I would never shut down the Linux system. I would just close VMware out, and it would save the state of the system, because it was all software, and it would bring you back up right exactly where you were, which was great. The only downside is I had to keep running NTP to sync with an NTP server, NTP date, because my clock would, I'd leave at 6 o'clock at night, and I'd come in the morning, and it would be, I brought up my workstation as it's 6:01, on the workstation. So I just have to resync the clock. But, it was easy to install, and it was easy to operate.
Have you run the VMware server yet?
No, I have not. What's
that's something that I need to try and do. And the reason that I ask you all these questions is because lately one of the things I've been doing is looking into more of the virtualization things over here, and I've been trying different servers out. Underneath VMware, I have a registered version of VMware Workstation, and I've been running different servers underneath that. Some of them that are, some of them I set up myself, and some of them that already came as the packages that you can get. You can get those pre-done VMs. And I have tried, Ubuntu 6.10 and Debian and NetBSD, and I'm missing some. One of the ones that one of the guys mentioned on the one of the forums, Zen Server, which is really pretty cool actually. I've just been trying those out, different like LAMP server installs and things like that. And my idea was really that if I could, I wanted to see what they worked like and if they worked all right, and then possibly I would run VMware Server on a machine somewhere and, a couple of VM servers underneath that, or virtual servers underneath that, virtual LAMP servers. And that makes it real easy for me to keep my code portable and things like that. However, I have not had a whole lot of success in getting VMware Server to run. And then the one time I did get it to run, I couldn't get anything to run underneath it. So I'm just kind of looking for anybody who has any hints and tips about that. What kind of, ideally, I guess the smart thing to do would be to get a server running a very thin version of Linux, perhaps, and then try and run VMware Server underneath that. Because you don't want, a lot of bulky overhead, I guess, if you're just going to run it as a VMware Server. But, I don't know, I'm still experimenting. It's some neat stuff, though.
So you guys ready for the daylight saving time coming early this year, this Sunday?
No.
There's an article on Desktop Linux by Stephen Von Nichols about it, how to check to see that your system's configured properly. I'll post the link in the IRC.
I don't think any of my Linux systems are going to have a problem, because they all run on NTP anyway.
Exactly.
updates that way. It, the Windows systems that I work with at work are going to be a pain in the butt, I'm sure.
Most Linux systems use the UTC, and you just have the local time zone set.
Mm-hmm.
But the article, you know, goes through the commands to issue. You could see, you know, what should be the results and whether or not it's set up correctly.
Have to check that out.
Yeah, all those Windows boxes are going to be a freaking mess. You know, I see these emails coming from the administrators. They're like, if you have, you know, your meetings scheduled, please unschedule them and then apply the patch and then reschedule the meetings and you should be okay.
Yeah. I heard, did you read that or listen to the Novell Open Audio? That was about a couple weeks ago that talked about that.
Yeah, they made a big deal about it.
Sounds like it's going to be an interesting problem.
Yeah, you see these articles, you know, the last few days. This is going to be worse than Y2K.
I'll say the whole world's going to stop.
Oh, my God. All it means is you get some guy showing up at a conference room and the meeting's was over an hour ago.
Yeah.
No.
You know what? Thankfully, most of the software that we run in my shop is like web-based software. So it really doesn't matter if the Windows PC that they're running it on out there has a correct time or not. Thankfully.
Have you looked into using VirtualBox at all?
No.
I wonder how well that could. I have not tried it yet, but I just installed it. So, I'm just curious how well that works.
It's supposed to be pretty neat. I didn't think it was, you know, at a very installable state yet, but I haven't looked for it in quite a while. So.
Yeah, it took me all of, what, 2 minutes to install it, and that included downloading it. So, I don't know what I'm going to do with it.
You're going to run a virtual box.
That's it. I don't know yet, but I'll have to see how well. I wonder what opera. Huh, we support 32-bit Windows and many Linux distributions. Support for OS X and C4 operating systems is currently in the works. So the host. Oh, wait. I wonder what they support for guest operating system. Let's see.
Anything, right? Doesn't it create a, you know, it's like a VM server kind of.
Guest OS Windows works, all of them except for Windows 98 and older. Works with editions. Linux family works with editions. We have Slackware works. FreeBSDs work partially. OpenBSD works. PCBSD doesn't work. BEOS doesn't work.
Tell me it isn't so.
I wonder what they mean by additions, though. All distributions.
Oh, because it's the additions that's the free one. You just downloaded regular VirtualBox?
I downloaded the free one.
That's the additions. That isn't a download. You have to download and compile it, right?
No, there was a binary for it.
Not the additions, dude.
Oh, you know what? I grabbed the personal use one. I didn't grab the open. Yeah, you got to compile it. There's a tarball. Now I'm going to have to remove it and compile the open source one. I don't know. I'll have to look into it. Oh, but it looks pretty interesting. I don't know what I'm going to run on it.
Anything you want. Except for the ones you couldn't.
Something interesting, right? I don't know. You probably same thing with me. You know, I just I put different operating systems under VMware workstation and check them out, and then you know, they just sit there. However, you know, it has been really interesting to run the different the VMware the LAMP servers under VMware.
Uh huh.
And the one that I really really dig is the NAMP server, which is a NetBSD. It's a pre-done package, you know, pre-done VM, and the NAMP, N-A-M-P VM, NetBSD, Apache, MySQL, PHP, really, really fast. The only weird thing about it is, like, it doesn't use the short form of the PHP start code, you know, when you first start a PHP script, you do the less than symbol and a question mark. And if you just do those two, that's the short form. The long form is you do the less than symbol, a question mark, and PHP after it. And under the NAMP server, you have to do the PHP after it. And I'm not quite sure where to change that so that it will use the short form. Other than that, it's faster than hell. And it's really cool to have this as a pre-done virtual machine because it's very, very small. And, like, you could take the whole virtual machine and, you know, stick two or three or four of them on a CD-ROM, you know what I mean, and take them with you and do what you got to do. It's really, it's an interesting way to do things, I think. Like I said, I really need to get virtual or VMware server running on something, and then I could have a lot more fun playing with those, I think.
Yeah. Virtual machines are cool. I love virtual machines.
Yeah. Yeah.
John from Jack Attack is always playing with virtual machines, too. Hmm. And Alan's playing with a virtual McGraw.
Don't go there, man.
Sorry, I just wanted to hear your lovely voice. I didn't know how to elicit a response from you.
You just ask.
Other than poking the bear.
I am awake. I just didn't have anything.
Checking to see you're awake.
No, I just, you know, I didn't have anything to add, so I didn't say anything.
Yes, you do. You have something to add.
Oh.
You have a product review, Alan.
Are you pregnant?
Am I? No.
Leg, did you not protect?
Knocked him off. Come on, Alan, out with it, man. Let's hear the product review. I want to hear all about it.
Oh, my product review. Yes, I bought a MacBook. I said, all you people be evil to me, but I did.
Pat, how does that make you feel?
Just because I like it.
How does it make you feel, Pat?
So now, I don't care either way, to be honest.
You can be honest, Pat. You can,
if it makes you happy, more power to you.
You can,
and it did, so that's why I bought it.
Did you buy it at the Apple store?
No, I like it. I wanted to buy a new laptop, and that was just nice, and I like it. So that's my product review. If you like it, you buy it.
Can we have a little more?
Have you done, like, the Parallels thing, and you're running, you know?
Oh, yeah, I've been playing around with Parallels on it. I have to figure out how to see if I can get the Parallels to go full screen on it. It tends to make it a square screen in the middle on it. But other than that, I mean, it works perfectly. I thought, okay. It, you know, it works perfectly. Actually, you can run two of them on there. I have a CentOS I'm playing with on there because that's closest to the Red Hat Enterprise 4 that I'm running at work.
It is Red
Hat. Also Ubuntu. Well, yeah, it is. It's the Enterprise 4 without all the Red Hat stuff in it. Since I run that at work, it's good to play around with stuff. But machine works perfectly on it.
Do you find that it's a pain in the ass having that single mouse button thing?
No, because most of the time I have a regular mouse that I plug into it, which is the same way when I have with my other laptop. I have, you know, I never use the trackpad or anything on there. I always plug a mouse into it. So the, you know, having one button doesn't really bother me at all.
So what's your impressions of using OS 10.4.8? I assume for a while.
Yeah, I think it's 10.4.8 or whatever it is. You know, it's the same that's running on the Mac on the Mac Mini here. So you know, I'm completely used to it in the first place. So I was, you know, shy of the fact that I could fold it up and put it into a backpack. There's really no difference there between that and like the Mini. It's faster and all, but other than that, you know.
Nice.
It's a nice system. I don't worry about the DRM crap because I don't buy music off of iTunes, so that shit doesn't bother me at all. The only thing I use iTunes for is to download the iPod or podcast anyway, so I don't store music. I never got into listening music on the computer. But only because I usually have better speakers on the stereo behind me, so. But that's my review.
So what are you running on it now, aside from OS 10?
Well, in parallels, like I said, I have CentOS and Ubuntu, whatever they call 6.1 there, 6.10.
Feisty.
Is that Edgy? I think it's the name.
Have you tried?
It is Edgy, right? Yeah.
Yeah, whatever 6.10 is.
Have you tried?
I can never remember the names.
Have you tried, like, dual booting, or are you just going the virtual machine route?
I'm just going to do the virtual machine. I don't. Dual booting doesn't do anything for me. You know, it's like, if you want to run something, you either have to do one or the other, and sometimes I start up and it's like, oh, let me do this. I don't feel like rebooting a machine just to get into an operating system. The pleasure of virtual machines is, you know, I don't have to worry about rebooting all the time.
So do you think you'll be looking into Tiger when it comes out? Or is it Leopard?
Leopard.
Oh, he knows, man. Know. He's drunk. He's drunk from the apple fountain.
Yep. He's got the Mac Kool-Aid going on, huh?
Well, I had that from a long time ago. It's not anything new.
Alan Apple Metzler. Mrs. Jobs.
I mean, I've been collecting Macs since we did that little failed project there. I started collecting Macs. So you have to blame that project.
Who are Alan's heroes? Tim and Steve.
No. Nothing like
the
that.
The Woz.
Nothing like that. I just happen to like the machine.
Hey, now the Woz is cool. Don't be doing
that. Yeah, the Woz is cool.
Woz is the man.
He hasn't done anything of at Apple for years. Anything of substance, anyway.
Gets his paycheck.
Yeah. So I was going to Apple. I look at that shop rat, says Apple McGraw.
I don't like him. Please stop this.
I think Ben uses Alan's picture as his icon over at Dave Yates' forum.
Oh, he does.
Alan's picture or Alan standing next to Tim McGraw?
Alan's picture.
Oh, yeah, that's a terrible one, that one there, too, so.
That's funny. Oh, boy, another productive tech show, huh? Us just getting together and shooting crap the whole time. Well, for us getting together and shooting crap for 5 minutes and then Dan talking for the other...
Dan went off, man.
Dan monopolized.
He sounded like he was really wound up and he needed to release, you know?
Yeah, well, I thought he was married. He could get a release some other way. I don't know.
I'm going through Warcraft withdrawal right now, so.
Oh, yeah,
that's what it is.
World of Warcraft withdrawal. We've taken away from his first love now.
An intervention's coming for you, Dan. you'll be walking out from your car to go into your office, and a black van will pull up, and the door will open up, and they'll grab you.
You know,
and you'll wake up in a room surrounded by friends and family.
That would be hard to do because all my work friends play Warcraft too. Most of them. And they're. That's like the big conversation. Everything stops and we all sit around and talk about Warcraft. What we did
never
on our last
year. Never had the urge to play it, actually.
Oh, it's,
me either, man. You don't want to play it. Couldn't care less.
I can't find his picture on Dave Yates' blog. I mean, forum. Oh, it must be under episode discussions. I'm looking at High Post forum links. Who is it? Who has it?
I forget who it is. If you go through some of the threads, you'll spot it.
I don't see anybody. You said Dave Yates' forum.
Yeah, Dave Yates' forum.
Dun, dun, dun. Anything good on our Frapper map?
I don't think we got anybody new this week.
It trickled off, huh?
Well, it goes up and down, you know.
People are trying to get off our Frapper map.
Probably, yeah.
How do I unsubscribe?
Don't let them know I listen to the show.
Woo. Anything new about Lug Radio Live?
Not going.
Not going. I wish I was going.
Media not.
I wish I was going to scale, too.
You know, if they would just send me a ticket, I would probably go and, you know, then they could pick on the fat American or something, I guess.
They'll make fun of your accent.
Yes. I don't have an accent.
There's some people that look angry on our tech show, our Frapper map.
What's that?
There's some people who look angry on our Frapper map.
Yeah, we have a few serial-looking kind of dudes.
But we all love watching serial killers.
The tech show serial killer list. America's most wanted. There's some old Mexican guy on there, too. Black and white photo. He looks famous. I wonder who he is. It's like somebody I should know.
Do we have a song tonight?
Yeah, we have a song tonight.
Yes, we do. Actually, the person who we're going to play is this guy by the name of Val Davis. This guy, he's from Vermont. I was on the Ardour forum, and I was reading through some of the threads over there, and Val posted, said, yeah, check out one of my songs. So I've downloaded and I listened to the song, which is a song all over the world, it's called. He sounds a lot like Peter Gabriel singing. The music kind of reminds me of, like, Crosby, Stills, and Nash a little bit. It's pretty good.
Peter Gabriel meets Crosby, Stills, and Nash. Now, that's a description if I ever heard one.
Listen to the song, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. I'll put some links out on the RC for Val. Good stuff.
Does anybody like the way Frapper has designed their interface? Anybody?
I don't think anybody likes it.
So why did they do that?
Because they liked it.
Who's they? Frapper?
They want F at the
Frapper.
All right. Well, should I play us out of here?
As well.
Please, though.
Nobody else have anything?
Next week our guest is going to be Philip Coombs from the Zone Minder Project, which is software for Linux for like home security or security network camera kind of deal. So that should be interesting.
Who else we have coming up?
Nobody.
The magic's dead. Wait a minute. Next week you have just us. Look, oh, that's here. April. Sorry.
No.
Are we ever going to get those Novell people on?
Which ones?
One that beat the dead horse?
Nah, I gave up on that one.
John Mad Dog Hall. We haven't had him on, like, outside of the interview and at Ohio Fest last year.
Well, go get his email address and send
him. I can't find it.
Join the club.
Yeah.
Nobody can find it.
You know who might have it? The people from the Ohio Linuxes probably have it.
Maybe. We should try and get Bill Gates on. Bill Gates and I wonder if Steve Ballmer would come on. Yeah.
Developers.
That's what we need. Steve Ballmer and Steve Jobs. Pat's head would explode. You know what would be funny? If we invited a special guest on and he didn't know about it, and right at the beginning of the show we introduced the guest as Tim McGraw, and Alan would be in his glory. Alan's wife would be in her glory.
I would just like give the mic to her. I wouldn't bother with it at all.
Tim McGraw.
I think next week we should just skip out on the show and we should give the mic to all our wives and just let them talk. And everybody that's on the chat listening can just stick their wife on there.
Hell, my wife never even listened to the show.
Well, again, it would be something new for her then, right?
And then we'll see the Webelider hits for people looking for pictures of our wives.
All right, play us out, Dan.
All right, here we go.
All over the world?
Yeah.
Good night, everybody.
Thanks a lot for listening.
Thanks for listening.
Good night.
Nighty. Nighty. Turning the other cheek.
Somewhere in a desert, a child lies dying in her mother's embrace. Maybe from cold or from a gunshot wound. Maybe with starvation on her face.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush.
Shut up. Just shut up. It's over.